I'll only take one day off of exercise training. And a lot of people ask me, well, you know, I'm a 55-year-old dude, right? Back in my days in my 40s and early 30s, I was a, you know, pretty elite ultra athlete. And I would push myself to where, you know, I'd have to duct tape my lower legs on a 150-mile run just to get through it. I would have all these micro tears and, you know, muscular tears in my lower leg and my calf.
Welcome to the Hard Way Podcast with Joe DeSena, founder and CEO of Spartan Races. We're teaching you how to overcome your obstacles in your life the same way we teach our 10 million plus Spartans to overcome obstacles on the course, with insight from the smartest, most accomplished experts from every corner of the world. Get ready to elevate your life today.
Joe DeSena here, CEO and founder of Spartan and host of the Hard Way Podcast. I've got my buddy, Dr. Reg on, Dr. Reginald O'Hara. He does a lot of work with special forces and he's uncovered some interesting things that we could apply to our own lives. Welcome aboard, Doc.
Hey, thanks a lot, Joe. Thanks for having me on.
So you've been working with special forces with the operators for how long?
Total of 23 years in the Department of Defense.
All right. So you know a little something about high performers.
I know quite a bit about high performance and the injuries and both musculoskeletal and psychological that go along with those.
Here's a question to start off with. What makes a high performer? Is, you know, I've heard typically a high performer has some trauma in their early childhood that forces them or gets them, you know, pushing harder than they normally would. Is it they're just naturally born with the right genes? Or are they just more physically fit, more handsome, better look? Like, what is it, if you know, that you've seen over and over again that makes a high performer?
I think, Joe, a high performer is a mindset. And yes, there's always a genetic component to being a high-performance athlete, a high-performance business person, over-the-top achiever. But yes, I think that these individuals are unique in the fact that, you know, only roughly 1% of the U.S. military are comprised of Special Operations Forces operators. And it's a very rigorous, selective process that they have to go through, both from a mental and physical standpoint. For example, to become a U.S. Army Ranger, there's what we call Ranger Assessment Phases. So they have Ranger Assessment Phase 1, RASP 1, which is basically 30 days of no sleep. Roughly the average sleep over those 30 days is about 3.5 hours. And they're in a state of extreme caloric deficit throughout. So, you know, they're going to actually lose muscle. But at the same time, they have to operate at a high cognitive level because they have to navigate through woods. They've got to navigate very complex, austere courses. And, you know, greater than 80% of them or slightly more will not make it through that phase. So then if they do make it through, they've got several years where now they've got to go back to Ranger Assessment Phase 2, which is even longer and more rigorous. So I think that, yes, there is always a genetic component. Like, for example, we're not all going to be 6'7", 200 pounds, you know, which we have to probably be to be a major league pitcher. Or to, you know, be a NBA basketball player. We don't all have that genetic prowess. So there is a certain component of that. But I think that the big component is that they enjoy something rigorous and something that would almost seem to be impossible to the normal average human to overcome. Because the training requirements are year round. They, you know, for example, you might have a special operator who's been in for 5 years, but has already been on 10 to 15 combat deployments. So when I say combat deployments, these aren't just going for 6 months on a deployment, eating great food and kind of taking it easy. This is 6 months of unknown, sustained operations, direct action missions that they have to perform in an unknown, what we call in biology, a complex ecosystem. So not only do they have to navigate that terrain, but they also have to be psychologically and cognitively able to complete the mission, right? That is their main objective. So I think there's a built-in component to these individuals that Simply Joe enjoys doing something that seems almost or nearly impossible for the human to achieve. This is, you know, somewhat analogous. I go back to my ultra marathon running days. So I started doing ultra marathon running in my early 40s. And I'm sort of like the, I call myself the Indiana Jones rogue scientist of kind of unusual person. I and not only like to be in the classroom, an intellectual part of learning I enjoy, but also I feel as though, well, if you're going to ask a subject to do this kind of rigorous training, these experiments, you ought to be able to do them yourself. So, you know, I went out and actually did 24 100 mile marathons in the course of 6 years. And, you know, one of them was around Lake Tahoe where I did a 200 mile run. And, you know, unfortunately, I didn't make it all the way. I made it to mile 101 after climbing down from 10,000 feet. But it was sort of like working with this very high caliber special operations group that for me to relate more to them and what they go through, well, it was sort of like, well, you've got to know, at least have some practical working knowledge of how hard it actually is. So now I expose myself to those types of environments, minus being shot at, of course. Ran into a few grizzly bears, but avoided those. So I simply think, you know, Joe, we just have people that are, they want to achieve at the highest level. And, you know, they kind of get bored if you just say, I'm going to let you do something that's, you know, pretty easy to do. These aren't the types of people that want to engage in that. They want to engage in something that, you know, no normal human would volunteer to do, like these individuals.
If you had to define it with one word, right? If you're a hiring manager at a company, if you're looking for a mate that you may someday marry, like, is it energy? You know, I've done a lot of long distance things myself. I'm super impressed with what you just described in your, you know, sports background, your endurance background. Like, I've always been full of energy. You sound like you're full of energy. Those operators feel like they're full of energy. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, Joe, you know, when I work with those types of people, and I work with a lot of them in the Air Force and then prior to going to be a scientist in the U.S. Army, and when I was at the Center for Intrepid in San Antonio, which is part of Broke Army Medical Center, I would, you know, do assessments. We'd have 8 special operators come through the program 8 times a year. So we'd have a total roughly of about 64 in a year. And, you know, just being around those types of people, Joe, it seems as though that the standard is really high. So for me, it felt like, you know, if I'm working with these types of individuals, these high level performers, physically, mentally, then I have to be at that level. In other words, you really can't bullshit. I mean, you have to be straightforward. They appreciate you just saying telling the truth. You know, look, you're not performing at the level you should be. And they're honest too. And the key for them is they want to perform at the highest level. But one of the issues that I've seen, Joe, including myself, okay, I'm guilty of this as well. Maybe pushing too far beyond that, whatever that threshold is for the individual. And I believe that there is a individual threshold to where sometimes you might exceed that threshold to where you go into a state of chronic overtraining. And chronic overtraining, you know, when you talk to people, they think it's a physical thing, right? Like, I'm going to go out and run 100 miles a week. And I'm going to do weight training 5 days a week. And I'm not going to intake enough calories to sustain anabolism and, you know, increase my muscle mass or sustain it. So there's a threshold where sometimes they will exceed that and they don't know when to turn it off. So it's a matter of when I've worked with a lot of these individuals, it's actually trying to turn that button off. And that button is, you know, they have a hyperactive autonomic nervous system. So they're in basically either sympathetic overdrive or they're in parasympathetic overdrive. And the key goal is you want to get those in balance. You know, like sympathetic overdrive, we're way up here, parasympathetic's down here. We're trying to at least get these two systems that comprise the autonomic nervous system in somewhat of a balance. That's the key issue.
How would the average person do that? What are some simple things the average person could do that's trying to level themselves up? They're pushing maybe a little hard. Because what I don't want somebody listening saying, I went to the gym twice this week and I listened to Dr. Reg and I just don't want to, you know, I don't want to overtrain.
Right. So one of the things, and there's several things you can do, and I'll go from the extreme to sort of the lower extreme for the normal person. So when you're in an extreme state, when that nervous system is not balanced, you're in what I call in a hyperactive state, which basically parallels insufficient sleep. You know, you're not able to sleep well. That's a sign. Your resting heart rate is roughly 10 up to about 12 beats a minute higher than it normally is. You lack concentration, probably again correlated to lack of sleep. And you're in a chronic state of physical training. So some of the things, like for special operators that work, or what we call ketamine infusions, or stellate ganglion blocks, where you basically take a needle, put it into the neck where the vagal nerve is, vagus nerve. And that sometimes works just one of those. Maybe they need several. So that's sort of going to the extreme. And now when I go back down, like at Center for Intrepid, we had float tanks. In flotation stimulation technique is basically you're in an enclosed chamber with roughly 1,500 pounds of Epsom salt. The water temperature is roughly equivalent to your skin temperature. And due to the salt, obviously, you have buoyancy and you're able to float. Now, if you take somebody whose resting blood pressure is elevated, the resting heart rate's elevated, they have all these signs of a hyperactive nervous system. And you put them in this tank several times where they just simply float. Lots of those types of people will actually fall asleep. You'll have to wake them up because they're in such a deep sleep state. It induces that. So after several times, even one time, you have somebody that comes out, you'll see substantial reductions in those, what we call physiological parameters.
But most people don't have access to that injection in the neck or that float tank.
Correct. So other things I found, Joe, are, you know, like cryotherapy, there's some anecdotal evidence that this works. Being in an anti-gravity chair where you elevate your legs, right? Where you could have some peripheral type swelling and edema in the lower leg, that helps. Water type therapy, believe it or not, just getting into a pool, you know, you have these plastic weights that you have force resistance against the current in the water. That actually we found with special operators in that state work, they love the water. So that's one thing anybody can have access to, is just simply get into a pool and do some of low level type strengthening with these water resistant type weights. The other thing is massage actually helps. That's anecdotal too. Some deep massage helps. Some people say, well, when I get a deep massage, I'm sore than when I went in. However, you know, sometimes you can develop these knots in your back, your upper shoulders because of stress. It actually works that out. So you'll be sore for a few days. But there's some decent anecdotal evidence to support massage therapy. And again, Joe, I think too, you know, it's individual. There's so much individuality that, you know, I would say that there's no real definitive standard of care for somebody in this type of state.
Well, I would argue, I've done a lot of stuff too. I guess as I'm listening to you, I'm thinking, you know, make sure you earn it, earn the massage, earn the cold plunge, right? Sure. Earn these moments of relaxation. And of course it makes sense that a massage would calm things down. Of course it makes sense that a cold plunge, a sauna probably does the same thing, some yoga, right?
Yeah. Also, you know, deep diaphragmatic breathing, although a lot of people have a, you know, you need to learn how to do this, but it does work. Where you, when you inhale through your nose and you put a, one hand on your stomach, one hand on your chest. So how do you know that you're actually doing deep diaphragmatic breathing is that when you inhale through your nose, your belly should come way out, should distend outward, right? Should distend forward. That means the air is, that your oxygenation levels are deeper into that diaphragm, which helps relax your, again, your hypervigilant, hyperactive nervous system. Versus someone who inhales through their nose, their chest comes kind of out, but the air never gets down to their diaphragm. That is actually one, like the most simple thing. And I am actually guilty, Joe, of not following my own advice.
Happens to all of us, but it's good. My mother in the 70s was preaching a lot of this stuff. And so it's good to hear that what your, with your analysis, with your research on the highest of high performing individuals on the planet, these techniques are good. But let's make sure, if you're listening or watching, let's make sure that you actually push yourself to a limit where you're getting those benefits as well. And you're not saying you need a day of rest and relaxation after watching Netflix on the couch all day.
Correct. So, you know, Joe, when we talk about this, you know, one of my, I do myself do this. I only take one day off of exercise training. And a lot of people ask me, well, you know, I'm a 55-year-old dude, right? Back in my days in my 40s and early 30s, I was a, you know, pretty elite ultra athlete. And I would push myself to where, you know, I'd have to duct tape my lower legs on a 150-mile run just to get through it. I would have all these micro tears and, you know, muscular tears in my lower leg and my calf, shin splints. So now I'd push myself to that limit. But, you know, I had a catastrophic accident, near death accident, doing that towards right before I hit 50. And, you know, now my goal is to really look at exercise and training, you know, 2 to 3 days a week of weight training, nothing like heavy weight, moderately heavy, more of reduced recovery between sets, and in doing something cardiovascular at least 50 minutes, 5 days a week. For just overall general health, you know, I want a high density lipoprotein to clear the bad cholesterol out of my arteries. So more of a cardiovascular and a cognitive benefit. So when you do this aerobic training, if you do it at a moderate intensity level, you also have something in your brain called brain-derived neurotrophic factors called BDNF, which helps stave off Alzheimer's and dementia. And there's very good empirical evidence to support that that is factual and true. So, you know, knowing the literature kind of helps me with that.
Yeah. So you're saying staying in zone two, going for that jog, that's conversational pace, is a pretty healthy exercise to embark on.
So I'll take it a step further, Joe. I'd say that you shouldn't be able to, you should not be able to carry on a conversation. But what you shouldn't be able to do is sing a tune like Whitney Houston, right? Like you shouldn't be able to sing, but it should be somewhat difficult for you and I, if we're out jogging, to carry on a full sentence, right? To complete a full sentence. So that's what I would define as moderately high intensity, but keeping in mind that when you do that, you don't really need to have a prolonged duration. So your time doesn't need to be as high because your intensity is higher. And an intensity level is the key, not only to your VO2 max, your cardiovascular fitness, but it's also key to increasing your high density lipoproteins, which is your HDL. That's the good part of your cholesterol. And as you age, there's a high genetic component that your total cholesterol will be much higher. And a doctor will come in and say, listen, Joe, you need to lower your cholesterol. And, you know, and I tell the doc, well, that means I'd have to eat crackers and drink water for the next 6 months. I don't think it'd be a great diet. The thing that I'm most concerned with is getting my HDLs higher. And I know that that type at that moderate intensity level, I can maintain those to prevent any cardiovascular incident.
I love it. All right, Doc, let's just wrap it up here. I'm a listener. I'm a viewer. I just want some simple advice every day. You're saying definitely more exercise, moderate pace. You're saying, correct me where I'm wrong, you're saying throw in the massage when you can, if you could afford it. They have massage chairs now in the airport, so
correct.
Everybody can get, right?
Correct.
Do the cold plunge. I hear all the time from guys, cold plunge is better than cryo. I think you agree.
I agree.
Eat more healthy foods. We agree on that.
Absolutely.
Right. And work hard, but not to the point where you're going backwards.
I think that's all, Craig. You know, one of the things, my philosophy, it's my personal philosophy, is you got to do something every day. Okay. But you also have to have a reprieve of one day a week. But for 6 days a week, you got to be moving your body at a moderately high intensity level. And you've got to throw in cardiovascular activity, unless you're a professional bodybuilder or you're training for some specific sport, specificity of training. And it's also important as you age, more so for women than men, but men have the same problem, is increasing your bone mineral density. So you need to be, picking up rocks, lifting them over your head to where that load is bearing down on the bone to cause these, what we call osteoblasts, to migrate and to create, a more denser bone in the outer portion of the bone. So these are like just everyday things that if you just want to increase your longevity, that are important to do and do them chronically, and get into, it's all habit, right, Joe? It's basically get yourself into a habit, just like, one of my professors once told me, Reggie, exercise should be just as important as you eating a high protein breakfast every morning. There's no difference between the two. They have to go hand in hand.
It sounds like you were trained by my mom. So yeah, we're on the same page. How do people find you, Dr. Reg?
Well, I'm on social media, but they can find me on LinkedIn, Reginald O'Hara, and I've got I don't know the actual web address, but if you look at me on LinkedIn, Chief of Biochemistry Services Division at William Beaumont Medical Center in El Paso, Texas.
You're amazing. Thanks for coming on, Doc.
Thank you so much, Joe.